Welcome to the July edition of Learning Unboxed. Similar to previous years, we typically take the month of July off. However, we know our listeners enjoy engaging with Learning Unboxed during the summer break. These next 4 weeks, we will explore four featured learning sites who are part of the Education Reimagined Ecosystem Lab. We will explore Fab Newport. We'll take a look at Rock Tree Sky. We'll visit with Norris School District. And we will have big conversations with Big Thought in Dallas, Texas. Education Reimagined's mission is to make learner-centered education available to every child in the United States, inclusive of race, background, and circumstance. Tune in to discover how each learning site uniquely fosters learner-centered experiences for their students.
I need somebody who knows how to connect. That's the part that has to be part of our frameworks that you and I are talking about, and that more people are starting to get hip to the game, because that's what the moment is requiring from us with these young people, and honestly, for the rest of our lives too.
Welcome to Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I'm your host and chief goddess of the PASS Foundation, Annalise Corbin. We know the current model for education is obsolete. It was designed to create fleets of assembly line workers, not the thinkers and problem solvers needed today. We've seen the innovations that are possible within education, and it's our goal to leave the box behind and reimagine what education can look like in your own backyard. Welcome to today's episode of Learning Unboxed. As always, I'm excited to talk with another great innovator in the transformative education space. And joining us today is Byron Sanders, who's president and CEO of Big Thought. So Byron, welcome to Learning Unboxed.
Oh, it is an absolute pleasure to be here with you today, Annalise. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it. And let's set a little bit of context for our listeners. Big Thought is an impact nonprofit that closes the opportunity gap by equipping all youth in marginalized communities with the skills and tools they need to imagine and create their best lives and a better world. Building on that strong foundation provided by family and caregivers, Big Thought are allies in young people's growth, helping to prepare them for further education, work, and life. Their most vital partners are the youth themselves. And that's the thing I love the most about our conversation, is that you value the agency of our young people. So, Byron, as we get started with all of this, I love the sort of final closing component that was sent over before our interview, the idea that the truth is greatness is in all of us, and that belief is the heart of the work at Big Thought. And that just gives me chills, but also brings me joy. So, yeah. Byron, talk to us about the sort of why Big Thought, right? Why this organization came to be in the first place? What was the need or the challenge that you're solving for?
The gift is, I've been CEO now for about 6 years. Before that, I was on the board. And the organization started back in 1987, actually. And its original purpose, its founders, Edith O'Donnell and Mitch Jericho, they saw a need for the arts to be in the schools. And it was kind of around that time that we were starting to lose opportunities for young people. We were starting to standardize a little bit more. And they just knew that there was a vital thing that needed to happen. The joy is that as we got to work on bringing the arts into schools, and at the time we were even called young audiences, every initiative that we were privileged to be a part of, a privilege to lead, beget a new question. So at the time, it was like, okay, can we build this massive ecosystem where we're bringing in artists and young people are getting access to these experiences who otherwise wouldn't have had? Yes, boom, okay, cool. I wonder if we could do this for after school more broadly, beyond just the arts. Okay, great, did that. Then it's like, oh, wow, this ecosystem is really showing a lot of benefits. Can we do this for summer? Okay. Summer, can we do it for social emotional learning? So every initiative beget a new question. And it led us to a really interesting spot. I'd taken over as CEO. And so I knew we were more than just the sum of our parts or whatever initiative we were leading. And we dug deep in our strategy to see what was the elemental through line from all of those ways that we've been out serving the community and working alongside young people. What we realized is that at its crux, we specialize in creating experiences that allowed young people to build the skills, build the muscles that allowed that greatness to shine through that otherwise don't get a lot of space to breathe in traditional school and education spaces. So all of those skills we got to focus on were things like the creative muscle, critical thinking and problem solving, emotional intelligence, right? The ability to learn the skill of human,
right,
to learn humanity, right?
Yeah.
And what we realized is that the places we've been, out of school time, summer, non-traditional learning experiences and opportunities, they were a beautiful, we used to say supplement, but it was a core part of a young person's learning journey that's as important as reading, writing, and arithmetic. And we knew that we had found kind of our elemental purpose. And so we leaned into that in new and different ways. And the reason why we think this closes the opportunity gap is because kids who are growing up in low-income communities, oftentimes these are kids of color, right? Black and Latino communities, particularly in urban settings, they don't have parents who can afford to go pay for a full-fledged summer camp, or they don't have parents who can drive them to the other side of town to participate in some really awesome conservatory experience. So how can we bring that to them? And it's not about inserting, to your point earlier, it's not about inserting greatness into these young people. It's the acknowledgement that if we create the conditions, access to these experiences, systems that allow them to know the skills that they're building and then leverage them, then that will allow the young people to do what they had on the inside already. They just needed a gym, experiences to build the muscle, and then a place to go and leverage that work. And that's the work that we're doing here at Big
Brother. And that is incredible because that work is so absolutely necessary. And I know that, you know, at PAS Foundation and at the Innovation Lab, we see those exact same things, right? That what you're talking about is that when we provide these opportunities and we understand all the circumstances and the dynamics that will either bring a child there or prohibit a child from being there or participating. And we can design experiences understanding the whole totality of a child's life, right? And their aspirations and their potential and the constraints that come from their family or their environment or take your pick. Because honestly, it's a really, really diverse set of issues, of possibility, of positivity, of negativity, right? That embroil every human, you know, as you said, you know, to get back to our humanness. And it's one of the elements that honestly, I really love about the way you think about this and the fact that you've leveraged those out of school or non-traditional learning experiences and said, we're going to take this and turn it on its head and make it core to who we are and what we're doing for kids. Love that. Love that.
Yes. Yeah, it really is it calls back to even in our language, you know, mm-hmm. as we talk about turning that thing on its head, it's why we use opportunity gap language as opposed to achievement gap language. You know, achievement gap, it points at the individual. And one, first of all, obviously we believe in individual agency, right? That's why we say youth agency is so core. It's one of the least tapped into forces of nature in the world. We believe in that. And what we're saying is that if you're seeing systemic outcomes, if you're seeing things writ large, right, whether we're talking about in Dallas, Texas, or Seattle, Washington, or Fargo, North Dakota, right, if you're seeing things that are very predictable, and you're seeing them in like demographics across the country, then you have to assume or deduce that these are not individual, unique human, that person's individual failings. You have to assume that there's a systemic force or systemic reasons or root causes at play here. And our thing is, go attack those, right? Swim upstream and change the conditions around these young people. Because but for those conditions, we would probably be seeing different outcomes. At least that was our hypothesis. That is our hypothesis, backed up by a whole lot of evidence and research. And so what we're saying is that the kids aren't lacking in achievement. The young people are lacking in opportunity. And if we close the opportunity gaps, we're going to see different achievement for however that young person defines it in their life. We'll see a different set of outcomes there if we attack the root and structural causes that are driving that. That's what drives how we've decided to spend our time and even the framing of what our work is supposed to be about.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do, again, I love that. And I also love the fact that when you think about opportunity, you as an organization, you've also recognized the fact that there are many opportunities, right, that students can have and get access to. But sometimes that access piece of it, there are barriers, right? You know, we can provide opportunity, but we don't understand that a kid can't get there, then that is not truly an opportunity for that individual. Right. So I appreciate the thinking that you've been putting into that and thinking about the way you do your programming and the opportunities for those students to actually take them to where the students are. So with that in mind, I'd like to dig in just a little bit for our listeners to have a better understanding of the actual programming that's happening. So thank you for setting the bigger, broader stage. We understand the why. So now talk to us about the how.
So we come at this from a number of different angles. We don't believe that we're not going to program our way into a more equitable and just society in and of itself. And what I mean by that is that I think sometimes people will say, man, look at that organization over there. They've been doing this program for years and the problem's still not solved. Because you know what? The program was never going to solve the problem. The program was going to serve the people who were there at the time. However, we see the work at the programmatic level helping to inform a bigger use case that can then inform policy and structural shifts. So basically, there's three big areas where we spend our time and our effort. We say create, convene, consult. Create big thought programs that actually go deep on staying on the cutting edge on what are we learning from these young people. What are we learning from this theory of change in execution practically? Does it work? What are the nuances in the execution? If you leave this piece out, it's not going to work. We learned that because we were doing the work, right? We stay in that work programmatically to do it. That can be anything from our after-school programs on a elementary campus from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. and how we do that with Thriving Minds. Or it could be also the work that we do programmatically in the juvenile justice system with Creative Solutions, where we're working with young people who have been formerly incarcerated sent to us, and they do a 7-week arts as workforce trauma-informed program that allows them to build those 21st century skills there, right? Programs. But the insights go into the convene part of our work that we actually call learning systems. That's where Big Thought is standing as a convener, a backbone agency, if you will, helping marshal, channel, support, and organize hundreds of other partners affecting work in maybe a geographic area. An example would be something that we did, we started back in 2014 called Dallas City of Learning. Over 400 organizations are part of this ecosystem. The goal was, no matter where a young person is in the city of Dallas at the time, we do not want them to not have access to something that is high quality, something at the right dosage, like the right amount of hours that research says, and something that is free and easy to tap into in any place in the city, right? So we actually have a heat map on where those experiences are, and it's not one organization that's going to be able to do that. It's lots of them. But the way we're supporting is based off of practices from our own practices and research that we've been able to build. The last part is consult. In 2019, we established something called Big Thought Institute. Big Thought Institute is the vision of our work where we have practitioners, technicians, and team members whose job is to go out and ensure that our institutional partners like school districts and state agencies, corporate partners, like we help build the corporate social responsibility strategy for Main Event based on principles that we've learned over the last years, and even at policy levels. So we go and advocate for a change in laws that affect the world that we work in the strategies where we are. That institute is designed to give us even more scale and in some instances actually change the playing field itself with policy and legal shifts that empower what we know needs to happen for young people to take place. So those are the big three areas. That's how we say we get to systemic change. As you can tell, they have increasing levels of scale the further along you go on that continuum. So you take these really powerful things that we've learned at the ground level, and at the end of that line, at the end of that circle, we're helping inform policy based on what we've been able to do over these years. And I'll give you a real quick example of what that's resulted in. Started off with an after-school program. We then built a large ecosystem based on that after-school work and principles and research that came from it. Then that ecosystem's research and evidence base ended up being the tool that we used to advocate for what ultimately became an over $1 billion investment in summer learning and extended year for students now across Texas. The Senate bill from three sessions ago here in Texas. So that's how that cycle works, and that's how we move towards systemic change.
Are you ready to join the movement to revolutionize education? Stay tuned for the full unveiling of my forthcoming book, Hacking School, Five Strategies to Link Learning to Life, where we'll dive deeper into these topics and unlock key strategies to educational transformation. If you want to stay in the know, sign up for notifications at pastfoundation.org/hacking school. Yeah, and that's an incredibly powerful impact. And actually, the irony is you ran ahead of me, and I'm thrilled by that because my next question was literally going to be, okay, this is all awesome, and how do we take all that awesomeness and actually effectively change or impact from a positive standpoint the system of education itself? And so that's part of what you're talking about, in terms of being able to do that. But I want to dig into that just a little bit more, because we know as leaders of community-based nonprofits and the work that we do, I have no doubt that your work and my work, there's a lot of synergies in the experiences that we've had over time, I have no doubt. But ultimately, what certainly I know, and I suspect that you've seen this numerous times yourself, is that, you know, if we can't figure out how to take the bigger body of work that we have and force a shift or a change on the bigger systemic issues that are driving the issues to begin with, we're ultimately beating our heads against a wall, if we will, right? So I'm really curious about that piece, because that the collective set of work that Big Thought is doing, I'm curious about how it is having a tangible impact in the day-to-day of educational lives of the students that are being served. What does that look like?
So the way it looks for us is we acknowledged the very thing that you just said a few years back, because honestly, we did. We got tired of beating our head up against a wall. And, you know, at some point, we hear educators all the time. We work very closely with all of our school districts and school partners. We hear educators say all the time, man, I would love to do everything that you're talking about, but you know what? Mm-hmm. Testing is coming up in 3 weeks and it's all hands on deck.
Yep. And matter of fact, we just don't have time for this.
Yep. We just don't have time. We don't have time. Yep. When in fact, the world has been screaming at us that we are sorely misaligned with one, the economic wherewithal of the world as it is, right? Young people are bored because they feel like it is not necessarily relevant to their lives. And even more recently, young people are being told literally you cannot talk about these things under threat of law for your, you know, the adults in your lives. Meanwhile, they go outside and it's literally all the only thing everybody is talking about. Right. So we have all of these forces that have been pushing down on schools and youth spaces, right? Youth development spaces. So what we realized was, guys, we have to do something about that. And that something is saying out loud and then saying with our budget and our allocation and people allocation that the things that we learn don't serve society well if they stay within our house. We have to intentionally go and convert that into advocacy and policy voices, because that's the place where we're going to be able to live out one of our big thought values that we named. We have six key values. One of those values is create impact for youth we will never meet. So I'll give you an example of what that looks like in a programmatic sense, and then I'll talk about how that actually has shifted and how we're creating tools for not just us, but also for the community at large and for our partners to be able to use to do the same things. So going back to that creative solutions example, we're working with young people who are some of the least well-served by the systems writ large. These are young people who have, you know, committed some kind of crime or been convicted of some kind of crime as a minor. And they've, all of them have served, most of them have served time in a juvenile detention facility. Some of them have gone directly to probation, but everybody's been convicted of something, right? These are also the young people that have been expelled from, you know, their home school or might be in an alternative school or something of that nature. And we are one of the rare organizations that we don't screen offenses. So we will take aggravated assaults. We'll take sexual assaults. We'll take whatever comes, because those young people are coming with something that happened to them before the thing that they did. Research shows young people in the juvenile system have had on average 14 distinct traumatic experiences in their lives before they ever show up at a doorstep. And if you're familiar with adverse childhood experiences research, that evidence base says that young people carrying around trauma have actual brain molding that is different from people who have not experienced trauma, just like somebody who's come back from two tours of duty in Afghanistan, except they're 9 years old, right? Okay, so we designed this whole program, 7 weeks, come to us in the summer. We are paying them to be artists. They do either performing arts or visual arts. They're learning workforce skills, how to show up on time, how to talk with somebody, how to work and to collaborate. We're doing all of that. They get through the experience, and at the end of that summer, they have a capstone deliverable. So they're going to have an artifact that shows their work, right, that they built over these last several weeks, where they built these distinct artistic and creative skills. And they've been building these 21st century durable skills we call creator skills. All right. So then they're on stage. They're speaking with all of the fluidity of someone who's been practiced in monologuing, right? They're dancing. They're painting. They have a gallery showing where they're standing with their chest out next to a ceramic sculpture that they built that looks like their face. And they're talking about their face with pride, right? That happens, and it's a life-changing moment. Families have been reunited. They're doing all these different things. But also, we have the lowest recidivism rate serving Dallas County. 7 years average of less than 10% reoffending, given that we have the highest thing. A normal young person without access to these resources is 60 to 80% likely to reoffend. So from 60 to 80 to 10, that's a win. But the problem is, that's one program. It's a few hundred kids over several years. How do we start to systematize that? How do we equip other people? So what we did was we distilled, what are the 21st century skills that are transferable, that are coming through this experiences and many like them in the out-of-school time space? And we built something called the Creator Archetype. Creator Archetype is our framework for actually acknowledging and crediting 21st century skill development. So those things that we used to kind of nod to and say, hey, this is really important. We're like, okay, but are you building them? Like, I don't know. I hope so. What we can now say is we have a framework that helps you both, one, know, two, you're not going to build every 21st century skill in your experiences. So which ones do you specialize in, program provider? And then equip the young people with the language to know, I didn't just go to a camp where I was, you know, stuck away somewhere from my mom while she was at work. I actually now am a public speaker.
Right. I have skills. Useful. I can build a portfolio of myself.
That's right. That's right. And now we have created a means for those programmatic partners to issue badges and digital credentials conveying the building of those skills. And young people are taking those and flipping those into really cool next steps along their journey. To your point, now they have a portfolio, just the way we have transcripts. They now have a portfolio saying, this is what I am, this is what I can do, and this is who I am, that tells a bigger, broader story. That's where the future of education is going.
Yeah, I hope you're right that that is where it's going, because like you, that's what we are also advocating for, right? So I totally understand and agree with that, because we are in fact advocating for those things. I think that one of the other things that's really interesting about this conversation for me is I love the way that you've couched this work in an understanding that says it's not just big thought. And it's not even just this kid in this neighborhood with this family in this school, or, you know, this, post-juvenile issue, right? However you want to couch it, right? That you've literally said it is the entire landscape or the ecosystem that is this individual child's life and world. And so by intentionally creating an ecosystems approach, I would argue that it has the potential to impact the very broad collective set of systems that are in play altogether. Right?
You are nailing it. I couldn't have summed it up better, at least because to that point, it is the tacit acknowledgement that we are the ones who created, okay, this is school day time.
Right.
Now this is after school time. Okay, now we're in summertime, right? These are false lines in a child's life. These meridians don't actually exist for a child.
They're artificial. They're completely artificial. Yes,
they're completely,
I agree,
artificial, right? And so this kid is one kid who's experiencing life all the time, from the time they wake up to the time they go back to sleep and everything in between. And if we have these divisions in structure that don't allow us to work together, to collaborate, to share information, to make sure kids aren't falling between the cracks, the ones who suffer are the young people, based on these false divisions that we put together for a lot of different reasons, structure, organization, money, whatever. But if we create an ecosystem, if we look at everything as a network and a matrix, and we start operating with that truth and recognizing that learning absolutely has to happen within a classroom. Of course it does. And the learning that happens outside of a traditional classroom matters as much. Then all of a sudden, we have a whole new educational ecosystem. Then all of a sudden, kids aren't going to be talking about I'm bored, because what we're saying is that the things that you actually like doing,
you get to go do.
You get to go do.
And by the way, we're going to give you credit for it. It's going to count towards your future and everything that you aspire to be in life. It's going to matter.
It matters. Yes. Because you know what? I have never heard somebody to this day. I've asked this question, and I talk a lot to a bunch of people. And I have never had anybody say, you know what? That bell ringer that I did that one time before my math lesson in the middle of the year, as we were getting ready for test prep, that changed my life.
I know. You are never going to hear a kid say that changed their lives. I just promise you that.
It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Yeah. So why are we calibrating our entire system to prioritize the things that would come from what should honestly be one piece of a tool set that a young person has to go out and thrive? Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't we credit their time outside of the classroom doing really
100%,
cool stuff
like this? Literally, yeah. Everything we do should count. It should matter, right? You know, and when you talk to kids who are bored, right, you realize fundamentally it's not because, obviously, it's not because they're bad kids. And I can't tell you how many times I've heard that. It's not because they're not interested. They might not be interested in that particular thing, but I can promise you they're interested humans, right? There's a thing out there that gets them jazzed.
Yes.
And the reality is when we grab a hold of the things that jazz a kid, whatever that happens to be, and we allow them to explore that thing with full passion and compassion and understanding and knowledge that's fed at a rate that that child can then internalize and actually use, they're not bored. They're going to show up every single day. And more importantly, they're going to show you what that experience can truly mean.
Yeah. And you know what, Annalise? Sometimes people listen to us. They'll hear, they're like, oh, y'all's heads are in the clouds. Look at you with your little, I'm going to tell you that this is why I'm so excited that I've had multiple different experiences. So before being CEO of Big Thought, I actually was in the finance sector, right? Mm-hmm. And so I was responsible for all the things that apparently people get a lot of money and respect for, which is, you know, knowing what to do with money. Okay. All right, great, fine, cool. But you know what? That's actually what has informed and made me an even deeper believer on the work that we're doing and the framing that we brought. And I'll give you a perfect example of this. It even shows up at the macroeconomic level. So in 1975, the S&P 500, they were looking at the valuation on what gives that its value. And they broke it down between hard assets, soft assets, right? Hard assets being the widgets, the gadgets, the hard stuff, the things you could touch that was bringing the value to the major companies in the world. Because I'm going to talk about trend. Soft assets was the inverse. And so about 80%+ of the S&P 500 in 1975 was determined by hard assets. And that makes sense at the time, right? You could think about the major companies at the time, GM, Ford, Coca-Cola, they were really up there kind of moving the world, moving the market. Fast forward to 2020. Now it's the inverse. 90% of the S&P 500 value is derived from soft assets. Innovation, intellectual property, brand equity, the expectation of success, right? That's why we have ESG reports and CSR reports, because now all of a sudden this stuff has real market value. So we're talking about billions of dollars here being built off of things that people would call creative or innovative or, wow, people feel really connected to this brand. We know that that's the stuff that's even moving the macro economy. And we still don't create space for it in our human development systems, because where are all of these innovators, creative and innovative thinkers are going to come from? And when you talk to employers of the technology spaces out there, when they're thinking about people that they're wanting to hire, they're saying, yes, I need somebody who knows and understands coding. That's why digital fluency is still one of the parts of the creator archetype. But more importantly, I need a creative coder. I need one who understands human beings. I don't need somebody that I have to hire, stick in a cubicle and say, don't come outside because you're scaring all of the, clients. I need somebody who knows how to connect. That's the part that has to be part of our frameworks that you and I are talking about, and that more people are starting to get hip to the game, because that's what the moment is requiring from us with these young people. And honestly, for the rest of our lives too.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, and it's really remarkable to me, right, that I will fully admit, I don't think I've ever had a guest on this program that was able to summarize in such a way based on you know, what's going on in the S&P 500. And I love that you were able to do that for us, because I think I have a better understanding of S&P 500 after that piece of conversation than I've ever had in my entire life. So thank you for the gift that you gave to me and to others. You know, I always like to think about wrapping up the conversations by recognizing that folks are listening from all over the world, and Big Thought is not in their backyard. Right. But there are elements of the things that you talked about that honestly any community can actually choose to do. And I chose that word specifically. Right. So if you were to advise someone who sent an email, picked up the phone and said, Byron, OK, I don't have Big Thought and I'm in the middle of Tucson, or I am, you know, in the middle of Santiago and I want to do some of these things, what would you tell me to do to get started?
Such a good question. There's a few things that I would say. If you are a parent, right, or an educator or somebody who is front facing with young people, whether it's your own kids or whether it's a small group of children that you are charged, gifted, and commissioned to go out and help and support, create experiences that are experiences. Don't seek to just teach. Create experiences that allow young people to take on and embrace risk. Sometimes it doesn't take, you know, being plugged into an after-school program with the best, latest, greatest tools, gadgets, and whatsits in order to do that. Encourage young people to create, to build at age-appropriate ways. If they're young, you know, as opposed to only using devices, encourage them to use things to build with their hands. Mm-hmm. If you have a child who enjoys playing with action figures, don't cut that off too soon. We shame some of our young people and we tell them to grow up. In fact, you need them to have active places where their imagination can be flexed and can run rampant. Allow them to play. Mm-hmm. As we start to move into the teenage spaces, you actually, believe it or not, just like we've started to, you know, there was this big movement where people were really paying attention to the brain science of early child development. The adolescent mind, I feel like, is the next horizon that's going to become very important for us to better understand. One of the
embrace
middle school.
It's awesome.
Everybody's like, terrible.
Yes. Let's grab those 5th to 8th graders, you know, the brain, the body. There's nothing about that is the same from day 1 to day 2. Let's grab that.
Absolutely.
Sorry, that was my digress.
Oh, no, love that digress, because it fits perfectly. There must be risk involved. Yeah. And here's what I mean by that. They have to go out and try something where they have the potential and in some instance likelihood to fail, but to fail safely and then to do it again. So the punitive measures, which whereby we're saying pass or fail, what they need to have the opportunity to do is go learn by doing and do so in ways that are challenging, new, and engaging. It cannot be rote. It cannot be too predictable. Right. And it cannot be overly redundant, right? So creating those kinds of experiences. If I'm a person who's a systems administrator or an educator or somebody who's responsible for a school district or state agency, I am saying, with all due haste, create your definition of a portrait of a learner. For us, it's the creator archetype. We've seen other amazing models. Purdue Polytechnic High School has a great one. Iowa Big has a great one. The school that I referenced in Fargo, Cass, has a beautiful portrait of a learner. With all due haste, shift the incentive structures from only and exclusively grades to being mapped to what are the skills that a person is building in order to be successful in the 21st century world. It is possible to move from the frameworks of number grades and letter grades to being mapped to skills that are being built and demonstrated. We have these young people who are starting to use these portraits who are getting into great schools, getting into great four-year colleges, getting into awesome career and technical pathways. They're thriving. We have this misbelief that if we don't only use the things that we've used with the ACT, SAT, AP scores, and, you know, getting a 403, all of those things as the primary markers of success in high school, coming out of high school, that the kids are going to be hung out to dry because the world doesn't really understand. No, there are models where that's happening. Big picture learning, big thought. I said, Iowa Big. There's a report that I would encourage everyone to go out and read. It's called, it was produced by Ed Reimagined and History Collab. It was commissioned by the Carnegie Foundation. They were looking at the future of education ecosystems. Go pick up that report because there's some great examples of how people are moving to this competency-based model that's community connected and based on relationships that these young people build. There, it is possible, it can be done. But we have to advocate for it. We have to move with intentionality, but we have to move with urgency. That's what I'm saying. If there's not a big thought in our world, you can create it in yours, but the work's got to be done. We're here as an ally to help you do it. That's why we created an institute. But at the end of the day, you've got to move because the young people are demanding it.
Mm-hmm. And they need us to do it. So absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Byron, thank you so much. Thank you for making time out of your day, having this conversation. I could talk to you for hours and I probably will at some point. Right. But thank you for the work that you're doing with Big Thought and the work that you're doing to help others understand that there is a path forward. So thank you for joining us today.
Hey, Annalise, thank you so much for lifting up this conversation. It is critical. We're going to shift the Overton window and people are going to start to recognize that these things we're talking about are not so far out. That will become the norm and we'll all be better for it. So I really appreciate this conversation. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I want to thank my guests and encourage you all to be part of the conversation. Meet me on social media at Annalise Corbin and join me next time as we stand up, step back, and lean in to reimagine education.